Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
This is my favorite Elliot Smith song. This podcast is all about trying to keep Elliot Smith's legacy alive in our own very small way. And we do that by speaking to well-known fans about their favorite song of his. So hi and welcome to episode 11 of the season. Our guest today is Claire Rousey. Claire is a musician and composer based in Los Angeles. She describes her work as emo ambient, and she's just preparing to release a new album called Sentiment, which is out later in April. The record is a follow-up to her last studio album, Everything Perfect Is Already Here, which came out in 2022. Claire says she listens to Elliot Smith at least 4 days of the week. And in this interview, we talk about her and her partner's shared Elliot passion, her song choice, which is actually a track we've never covered on the podcast before, and her "what would Elliot do" approach to navigating the ethics of the music industry. I really enjoyed listening to this conversation, so I hope you do too. Here's Claire Rousey with Elizabeth Woodstanley.
My name is Claire Rousey. I'm a musician and composer, and I live here in Los Angeles. I decided on New Monkey. There's a few different recorded versions of it. I'm just going to select the song in general, but I do think that each, like, the different versions that we have access to right now are, they're interesting in their own ways.
Here come the sidewalk boss again, telling me how I can't cave in, that I'm a study in black, need a pat on the back. I look up and smile, a picture of dissatisfaction that he can only see as a junkie. Though I might be straight as an arrow, he's busy shaking hands with my monkey, busy shaking hands with my monkey.
What drew you to this song?
So the first version I heard was like the whatever one is on the New Moon compilation of songs, and I was going just listening through that CD, and that song came on, and I was like, oh my god, this is like power pop masterpiece, like kind of sandwiched between these songs that kind of had a different aesthetic. So initially I was just like, oh, this is like the catchiest song I've ever heard in my life. But then going deeper, I think the lyrics, as well as some of the kind of like classic Elliot guitar moves that are featured in the song are like things that I just think of when I think of his music. I'm like, it's all here. It's like the hook, like the vocal hook is here, and the descending guitar, lowering like by a half step every time as he's like playing this chord starting the song, and I'm like, oh, it's like everything that I love about his music kind of all at one.
Yeah, it's funny that you mention discovering it on New Moon, because New Moon's like a funny album because it's just a hodgepodge of things. Mm-hmm. New Monkey was recorded when he was recording Either Or. And when I think about it in that context, and I think, oh, okay, I see where it's coming from. But it feels a little, at least in the sequence of songs, it feels a little out of place on New Moon.
Right. Yeah, definitely.
And the lyrics, which you mentioned, can you speak about what drew you to the lyrics or what you take away from the song?
Yeah, I mean, I think like so much of his music, the lyrics can kind of be or I guess people interpret them the way that they want to interpret them. And when I first heard it, like when I was first hearing that song, I was, like any of his music, I discovered it like on the internet, just because I wasn't of that generation, like of seeing him play or like buying the records when they were coming out. So like kind of working my way backwards through the discography and being like, okay, this came out at this time, but it was recorded like in the 90s, or at least the original version of the song was recorded in like the late 90s. So thinking lyrically, like where he would be at in the 90s, and like the other lyrics, I guess that would like, or the other like content that he's talking about on like Either Or, and around that time period, I'm like, okay, like you feel misunderstood maybe. And like, and things I guess that like stood out to me most were like when I was listening to newer mixes of it, or like alternative vocal tracks, where certain words like specifically words like depression and stuff were omitted. The vocal take changed, and it's like, oh, you're like trying to like prove to everybody you're not this like sad sack maybe. But when I originally heard it, I thought it was talking about like the music industry. I thought it was like one of his like I hate being in the music industry songs, which I don't think it is actually about that, but it could be.
Yeah, it could be. I mean, it was, I mean, thinking about it in context of Either Or, then it makes me think that it might be.
Yeah.
You gravitating to the song lyrically first, we'll go into musically in a minute. Were those the aspects that you were interested in as far as how he was expressing those thoughts about, you know, maybe struggling with making music for a living and wrestling with that?
Yeah, I think this song, at least the, if I'm looking at it through that lens, like kind of the music industry is this like oppressive, coercive, kind of opportunistic thing that's like leeching off of artists. And I guess in his situation, like he felt very much like everybody wanted everything, I guess.
Right.
So if you're looking at it from that point of view, and it sounds so silly because like being such a small artist, like for me, like my, as my own art and my own music, I'm like, yeah, like the music industry is like trying to get me, and like all these people are taking advantage of me. And like thinking of it on a, like if I'm thinking that I'm experiencing these things, I can't imagine what people at that level, or even like major celebrity level, like probably feel about the industry and things like that.
Right.
So lyrically, I was like, oh, yeah, like they're always trying to get you to do something and like coerce you into something that you don't feel comfortable doing. And I love like lyrically, like talking about like him, like somebody whispering in his ear, like not being, like being too afraid to look up, like all of these things of just being made so small and kind of just being like cornered almost and like pushed in this way. I also thought, like, obviously monkey is a euphemism for something, but I also really like the line that's talking about being straight as an arrow, but he's still busy with, and like using monkey as a euphemism for probably like multiple things at once. Mm-hmm. But like the little, like chiming in about sexuality was really funny, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Just kind of like, what would you do to get this? Like, how far can you go to like get what you want, or like are you gonna do this for me if I do this for you, and like kind of that like relationship in the music and like any industry like related to that that mm-hmm. like kind of goes on, and those like favors that go back and forth.
You started the conversation with gravitating to it musically,
yeah.
That it was very upbeat, and which, you know, he's got a pretty broad spectrum of songs in that sense. And so can you talk about that musical side and what you gravitated to?
Yeah, like the palm muted guitar and specifically like the palm muting of the electric guitar, and then like the drums coming in with no cymbals or hi-hats or anything, like playing on the floor tom. I think that's like in a lot of the songs that were recorded like mostly just acoustic guitar and vocals, like when he would play them live, like Say Night's Heaven is like that is like a move that I would hear in those like live recordings of those songs. So to hear it in New Monkey, like those same kind of like, I call them like his like signature moves or whatever, but it really does like catch you, and like, you know, all great artists, like when you hear their music, you're like, only they could have made this. And it was one of those moments where I was like, oh yeah, like this is like one of, he like does like certain types of songs, and this is one of those. Mm-hmm. Like this is, it makes it more special to me for some reason.
Right.
But yeah, it just like struck me as like a very like power pop type thing.
Mm-hmm.
Not all of his music is that upbeat, and yeah. Also like not all of it is like that simple, like harmonically. There is like some, I call it like fun stuff or like the cool chords. And I'm also like not super like well-versed in harmony, but like I recognize like him playing the same chord and like the root notes like descending like a half step at a time, and I'm like, oh, that's exactly what he does, and that's how the song starts. And I'm like, okay, I'm like hooked from that. And then the drums come in, I'm like, okay, it's like the drum beat that gets applied to some of these acoustic songs that like get built up for a full band when he plays live. So I'm like, okay, there's already like two of the things. And then when the song kind of explodes, like it's one of those things that's like kind of perpetually building the whole time until like the third verse or something, and then it kind of comes right back down, and that soft, quiet thing I'm a sucker for also, which was also very popular when that was being recorded.
You mentioned sort of discovering Elliott Smith through listening to his songs on the internet. So did that cause you to go back and sort of listen to the works in context of the albums?
Yeah, it was one of those things where I was introduced to his music and him as an artist just from like older musician friends who are kind of like the generation above me, mm-hmm. who like, we're like, oh yeah, Ellie, you might like this one record or you might like this song. But I didn't, when you're discovering an artist who isn't with us anymore and you're going off of just mostly the internet and then like what other people are telling you, you have no idea how to piece it together in like this chronological way. So I was like really obsessed with EXO for like ever. I was like, oh, this is like the best record. And then like kind of understanding his life and like the context to which like that record was made and all of the things that happened prior to like him having access to like that kind of like a studio and like arranging songs for like that record.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, cool. Now we can go backwards. And I've recorded myself at home like my whole life. So knowing that he started doing it himself at home and like home recording and like doing it yourself was like such a huge part of what he did and how he made music. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh yeah, like this is definitely an artist I need to dig into. But it's hard to kind of piece it together when you're looking at it as like this one, just like this blob of information.
Yeah.
Of like YouTube videos and like really low quality MP3s and like people like recording live shows in the 90s and then trying to like digitize it and like upload it.
Yeah.
And like you're just trying to like get as much information as you can. And then learning about like covers that he does, and influences and like just building on that. And there's almost like this endless amount of information once you first get into an artist like that. Whereas now I can kind of, I understand the trajectory and I've like done my homework, so to speak. I think it is interesting to discover an artist that way rather than being at one of the first shows they play and then watch them as they kind of like blow up or something.
Yeah, it's true. It's a different perspective because I think if you know somebody from the beginning and you kind of, you know, stick with listening to their music, and sometimes you can be disappointed.
Yeah.
I know it's kind of a strange thing to say, but, you know, if you're used to a certain, you know, if you're really into Elliott Smith's first album and then, you know, you look at, you know, Figure Eight, they're very different.
Yeah. And and hearing tracks off of both of those back to back with no context. And I'm like, who is this guy? But I know what you mean. You could be very disappointed.
Yeah.
Or feel like,
like, oh, I like that one, but...
Yeah, definitely. I think, like, high production, like, the higher the production value, the higher the chance that you feel like you got, like, grifted or something.
Right.
Might be, or, like, there's an authenticity that isn't there anymore, which I don't... As somebody who is constantly just trying to, like, up the production value in my own music, like, I do understand being, like, if you have access to, like, people who will help you with, like, writing and recording string arrangements to go along with your songs, like, why would you not do that?
Yeah.
Especially, like, you know, him being, like, big Beatles head.
Right.
It's like, why would you not take that opportunity, you know?
Yeah.
But I can definitely see it, the other side of it, where you see him play in a coffee shop or see him play in, like, a record store or something, and then there's, like, strings on, like, a record. You're like, what happened here?
So did you find, when you discovered his music, did you find it somewhat inspirational in that, you know, when you learned that, you know, he started out just recording things at home? And was that, you know, like, oh, well, I can work this way too? Like,
yeah, and knowing that there's, like, the equipment that he was using wasn't the best, and, like, how little money he had to like actually record these things and how much of it was like borrowed and like recording on other people's equipment. And like, I think knowing that some of these takes were like for these songs were like put together very quickly, like for some of the earlier work, I'm like, oh, okay, cool. Like maybe my gut reaction is when I'm recording, like the first take's always the best take type thing. And I don't think that's necessarily true all the time, but I think you can hear a bit of that in there.
Mm-hmm.
But to be honest, when I was first introduced to his music, my friend Mari introduced me to the music while we were on tour. And she was showing me just kind of like the greatest hits type thing, like bopping around on like an iPod while we were driving. And I was like, this is too dense for me. I don't like this. And it took like a couple tries. I wasn't one of those people that heard his music and was instantly in love with it.
Right.
It took a lot of like patience on my part to kind of like understand it. Huh. But then once I peeled back enough of it and then kind of like it clicked for me.
Yeah.
Then I was all in. But there was this moment where I was like hearing songs and I'm like, there's too many chords. Or like, this one's kind of just like winding road type song. And then you like, now that I listen, I'll even listen to those same songs and be like, oh no, this is like very straightforward. I totally get it.
Yeah. That's funny.
Yeah. So it's like, I wasn't an instant thing, but.
Well, the music you make is very different, which is interesting. I always love talking to musicians who are making something very different sounding than Elliot, but are very drawn to Elliot. So maybe that was maybe some of your first initial thoughts, like, because it was very different.
Yeah, definitely. And I think being young and being introduced to it and being so into like what I was doing.
Yeah.
Like being young and a musician, you're like so self-centered. You're like, no, what I'm doing is the most important. And, you know, hearing music that doesn't sound like what you're trying to achieve, you're like not as interested.
You're right.
But my friend Mari was also like, no, you need to check out like some of these like rarities and like alt cuts and like talking about like the Basement on a Hill like sessions and like the, she's like, oh, like the King's Crossing drums on this alt mix, like you'll really like it. It's like he was totally gonna go into like experimental music, like that was the next step, we all knew it was the next step. And I was like, okay. And that's kind of like how I was convinced. And I'm like, it's too dense. And then it's like, but he was into like experimental music. And I'm like, oh, I make that. Which is funny to be like the singer-songwriter is too dense for somebody who's like obsessed with extremely dense music sometimes.
Well, there's lots of ambient sounds mixed into From a Basement on a Hill specifically, which is interesting. Cause it does seem like he was sort of, you know, expanding out. Possibly.
Yeah, and it's, you know, obviously sad that you can't hear that, but I also think that like hearing those recordings like from where they're at and like in the context that that was released, it kind of is interesting. Like there's a humanity to some of those recordings, like because there's like ambient sounds and things like that, that maybe are like in a very different way, but similarly to like the very early recordings, you get like a similar feeling.
It's always interesting to me in talking to people about the song that they want to bring up, because it makes me think more about a song that I hear in passing, but I haven't really like thought so much about. So I'm curious to hear a little bit more about your thoughts about that kind of pop aesthetic that he does have in some of the songs and New Monkey and, you know, maybe it should have been on, you know, Either Or. It's something that you're drawn to as the song you wanted to talk about today.
Yeah, I think the power pop kind of element that I keep going back to and talking about is really what I guess like made it click for me, specifically with that song. And knowing when it was recorded, I'm like, oh, it has this very kind of like bouncy quality to it, like rhythmically it's kind of like this mid-tempo like bouncing along type song, where it's like Pictures of Me also is kind of like that bouncing along type song. And I'm like, okay, like I can see how these could be connected, like they go in the same category like musically for me. And I think also, I don't know, like the 90s, like there were so many bands that were doing like the really loud, really soft, really loud, really soft type songs. And like he does, like the song is very dynamic, but it isn't so extreme in that way that it becomes like a gimmick. And I really love when people use, like, I wouldn't call it like a trope, but it's like it was a popular choice at the time, like arranging songs where it's like the song like explodes with distortion and then like shrinks right back down to something really small,
right?
And he's like using that throughout the song, like especially going from like the chorus bridge kind of part into like the verse like towards the end of the song. And I'm like, oh, it's like what everybody else is doing, but for some reason it not only is like less gimmicky, it's also more accessible. Like it's the pop element, it like stays intact throughout the whole song, and there's like no part of it that doesn't just feel like a pop song,
right?
And I don't want to compare it to like this, but it's like I get some of the same feelings as like listening to like a Thin Lizzy song, where it's, you're just kind of like every time something happens, you're like, yeah, Yeah. like at least on the, you know, lighter side of thinking about the song.
Well, you mentioned the depression line before, but, you know, towards the end of the song, there's a line, pictures of hope and depression, and then it ends with that, anything is better than nothing, which, you know, it is a upbeat song, but it is kind of a downer.
Oh, it's a downer, lyrically. Yeah. Yeah, anything is better than nothing is probably one of my favorite lyrics of all time.
Yeah.
And this being my favorite Elliott Smith song, obviously. But yeah, the like repetition of that line is like, especially because it's such a catchy melody that the words are put to. Yeah, I don't know how to explain how I feel about that line specifically, because it's one of those things that gets you like really, it's like deep in you, I guess.
Well, it's interesting because it, you know, there is some optimism in the line, anything is better than nothing. It's, you know, okay, that's a glass, you know, half full person. But the way he's singing it and the repetition, I think, is that's like to me, it feels like he's trying to convince himself. Like,
yeah, definitely. I mean, I would, you know, if you want to view it through the lens of like talking about the music industry, it's like any kind of success is better than nothing, or recognition, or,
yeah,
I don't know, like space to create music. I feel like it's, I don't know, listening to like interviews and him talk about touring and people asking the same questions and him having to play the same songs, and he's like the classic, like, well, I can't remember what the studio session was. It was like the big studio session he did where he was playing all the EXO stuff, and he's like, he had to stop, and he's like, I'm not gonna do this. Like, what's the point of playing a song badly? I think like that attitude is also like interesting to think about within the context of anything's better than nothing.
Because
mm-hmm. Like, is it?
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Maybe nothing is better sometimes. Did this song help kind of kick off your interest into diving deeper into Elliott Smith?
Yeah. So this was one of the, you know, one of the songs I found later after I was like, oh, you know, I know Either Or, I know EXO. Like, and then I started working my way back to like the self-titled record, and then before that. And then I was like, okay, where do I go from here? Like, I'm at like Roman Candle. Do I just keep going like into like Heat Miser stuff? Right. Or like, I'm like, where do I go?
Yeah.
And then I was hip to it by like a friend that was like, no, there's like so much stuff out there, like especially like unofficial things, and with the internet, like there's endless versions of things.
Yeah.
But I think the first time I heard it, I was like, wow, the organ sounds so nice on it. I wish there was a version that just had like that, the chords with the organ playing the melody. And then they released the, like, I think it was like I don't know what the title they used for the Either Or, like expanded edition or whatever.
Right.
But it has like that 50-second clip of like the organ, like the melody and the chords. And I'm like, this is so beautiful. Like, this is such a beautiful combination, like harmonically and like melodically. You wouldn't have to put lyrics to it, like, to think that this is like, to me, like perfect.
Right.
But yeah, it was definitely like a later discovery. And then just kind of became a favorite because it's like such a sing along in my car while I'm sad, but don't want to like listen to like the real downers, you know?
Right. So is Elliott's music something that you continue to go back to and you know, listen to, you know, continually? Not continually, but, you know, like.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely listen to it. I think it would be like an exaggeration to say every day, but probably 4 out of 7 days of the week, something Elliott Smith related gets put on the turntable, or like gets put on in the car or something. Like, between me and my partner both being like super fans, and my partner has like all like the like 7 inches and everything, and is like was like really into like the physical rare items at a point. So there, it's always kind of coming up.
Okay. That's pretty regular.
Yeah. But also like learning, I didn't know how to play guitar very well until, like, I'm still not very good, but like I didn't really know how to play guitar at all until like 2 years ago. And somebody that I used to work with was like, if you want to learn how to play guitar, just learn Elliott Smith songs. You'll get real good real fast and you'll like figure out all these very like crazy ways, but that makes sense, like, of how to make your songs feel and sound more interesting.
So you challenged yourself with learning how to play some of the songs?
Yeah, I literally typed into Google like easiest Elliott Smith songs. And of course there's like 100 tutorials and all these people that are like, and when he played it live, he did it like this or whatever. And it's like, and make sure you're tuning everything a half step down. I've been learning all of these things. So I'm like, okay. Like, now I understand why it sounds the way it does. But like getting to know the music so intimately, I think, was because I really wanted to learn how to play guitar. Mm-hmm. And I was like, there are like 3 guitar players that I can think of that I actually like. And also, like, I don't know, his guitar playing specifically, and like the way he creates chord progressions is so unique that you could hear just like an isolated guitar take and be like, oh, that's an Elliott Smith song. And not a lot of people can do that. And that same kind of feeling is, and thing that I recognized in New Monkey is like in all of the music. I was talking about how much I listen to it at home, like, pretty frequently. But more than that, it's, like, somebody I think about a lot. And it's kind of creepy and weird to, like, in my mind, like, think about somebody who I never knew.
Yeah.
Like, friends of friends who knew him. I know people who, like, did stuff with him or whatever. But it's, like, I have no personal connection.
Mm-hmm.
So to have somebody that was that big of a force in a, like, this very strange way where it's like I have this, like, I'm perceiving everything from the outside, so it's kind of like I've built him up in my head the way that I want him to be.
Right.
I think a lot of people do that.
Yeah.
Especially for people that, like, aren't here anymore, because there is, they aren't there to tell you that you're wrong.
Right. You can imagine whatever.
Yeah, exactly. So no, just like that I'm a total freak and I think about him all the time.
Yeah.
And like base business decisions off of like, what would Elliott Smith do?
Yeah.
Is this like a gross thing that I'm doing right now for whatever music thing, this company, or
right,
letting somebody use my song or whatever?
Right.
So like a nice music industry ethics and like where I draw the line, I think, is kind of based off of what he might do.
Thanks very much to Claire for joining us on the podcast. As I mentioned before, Claire's new album is out on the 19th of April 2024, so do check that out when it's available. That's pretty much it for this week. Thank you very much for joining us. To play us out, we have a new cover to share with you. And before I do play that, I just wanted to say that if you'd like anything Elliott Smith related shared at the end of an episode, just get in touch with us on social media. You can find us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at MyFavySmithSong. So here's our cover for today. This is Lisa Osborne with some of our friends from the band Sea Dog with Between the Bars. See you soon.